Okay, all right, gang. Final shiur for Hilchos Borer. And we're talking about the final of the three criteria that we mentioned many, many moons ago that are required for Borer in the first place. We know that Borer is mutter if it is done in a manner that's considered to be derech achila. It's considered to be derech achila if we abide by three different criteria. Miyad, biyad, ochel, mitoch, psolas. We spent a lot of time speaking about what constitutes ochel, mitoch, psolas. When do we say that we're removing the good from the bad? How do we consider, what do we consider good? What do we consider bad? How do we define good? How do we define bad? We spoke last week about miyad, about what it means to separate for immediate purposes, for immediate use, what constitutes immediate, how close to the seudah, or how close to whatever activity it is that we're trying to separate for. Finally, let's talk about biyad. So this is another very, very important one. When we speak about separating only with our own hands, so we know intuitively that that's not really the case, right? We know that we spend a lot of time on Shabbos using silverware, hopefully. spend a lot of time using silverware, and when we do, granted, we are separating in all likelihood ochel from psolas, but we're also granted separating for immediate use. But like when we sit at the table, and that's what we're doing. You know, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're very much using utensils. So what exactly is the distinction? Hey Jeff, what exactly is the distinction between what we call separating biyad with our own hands and using what we know we use, meaning namely using silverware? So first and foremost, in terms of the various types of kelim that we might be talking about, here's the quote from the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, we've seen this halacha before, this is the very, very beginning of Simen Shin Yod Tes, in which the Mechaber states as follows. This is Sif Aleph, very beginning. Habara ocha mitoch psolas. If a person separates good from bad, we'll say at this point. Osha hayu lefanav shnei minei ochlim, where he has even two types of good that are in front of him. Ubara min mimin acher, and he separates one good variety from the other good varieties in the same bowl, on the same plate. Now, if he does so, benafa uvichvara, if he does so with various types of strainers, a strainer and a sieve and a colander, whatever you want to call them. So in that case, chayev. That is an absolute act of boer, absolute act of chilul Shabbos, chayev. If he uses some other things, bikanon uvsamchui, pater aval aser. If he uses some other kalim that are not strictly speaking utensils that are earmarked exclusively for the purpose of separating, of sorting out, so you're not allowed to do that either, but it's a case of pater aval aser. So you would be exempt in terms of the din d'oraisa, but you're on the hook for the din d'rabbanan. Either way, as far as we're concerned, you cannot use any of these kalim, any utensils, any tools, any appliances, any kitchen gadgets to be able to separate, to be able to sort, which is just pretty clear. So as clear as that is, then the obvious question is, again, what about the kinds of handheld tools that we use, forks, knives, spoons, and the like? When is that mutter? Why is it mutter? Generally, the poskim differentiate between a kli, an actual bona fide kli, and what we call yada arichta. When you're using a yada arichta, when you're using sort of an extension of your own hand, so then it really is still considered to be biyad. Then I'm still separating with my own hand. It's just sort of an extension of my hand. My wife has all these gadgets and gizmos because she's an occupational therapist. So every now and again, like something will come from Amazon, and it'll be in a weird package, and it'll be this like telescoping, you know, squeezy thing where you can like put your socks on if you've had a wrist injury and all those kinds of things. So at what point do you say that that's just a yada arichta? It's just an extension of my own hand, but really would still constitute derech achila. And when do we say that, no, that's really utilizing a kli, an actual tool, utensil, in the interest of borer, which becomes much more akin to the real bona fide malach, and therefore should be usher. What is the fault line between the two? That is the subject of this tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, rather early tshuva. This is from the very first chelak of Igros Moshe. And it's a nice work through on exactly the distinction that exists between silverware and other kinds of kalim on the one hand, and on the other hand points to the reality that not always will it be mutter to even use silverware, meaning it's not as though we have carte blanche to use a fork, because a fork is always the extension of my hand, or a spoon is always an extension of my hand, or a knife is even always an extension of my hand. It is so claimed only when we say that this is really part and parcel of actual normative, typical achila. Remember that derech achila is what we're trying to shoot for when we incorporate these different criteria. The reason why it needs to be miyad biyad ochel mitoch psalos is because if we're doing those three things, then we could say that whatever I'm doing is really no different from a typical regular act of eating, and it must be that a typical regular act of eating is mutar on Shabbos. Can't be that eating is considered a malachas machsheves. Can't be that eating is considered to be something that's prohibited on Shabbos. So if I'm abiding by the kinds of criteria that effectively make up derech achila, make up an act of eating, then it must be mutter. So when can I be said that I'm using silverware in a manner of achila, and when is it really a manner of boer?
Is the distinction whether or not you could do it with your hand?
What do you mean?
Like for example, you said like the thing that puts on the socks. So like technically you'd be able to put your socks on with your hand, but you can't. So you're using the thing.
Maybe.
Or like soup, you can technically.
See, that the truth is that we'll see, but that in of itself might be an interesting kind of test case. Something as simple as, let's say, I mean, not that that's actually an act of boer, right? Putting on a pair of socks, not boer. But
I'm just saying, like something that you'd use, like you're using a cup because you don't want to sit there with the water in your hand.
Right. Okay.
You can technically eat salad with your hands, but that's
gross. At least for the other people who might be sitting at the table, who might have different expectations of table manners.
But if one makes apple slices, you couldn't do that with your hand. You'd need a knife.
All good. Hey, Aaron, how are you? All good. Yeah, all good questions. All good questions, all good points, and I think we're probably going to hit upon all of them. Let's take a look at the actual tshuva from Rav Moshe. He is writing to a Rav Noach, either Breuer or Breyer, I think, in Spring Valley. Not sure. At any rate, on Erev Chanukah, Chaf Dal Kislev Tav Shin Yud Beis. B'davar Borer. So here we go. B'davar Borer B'Shabbos Lechol La'alter. So assuming I'm separating for immediate use, which we know is one of the criteria that is necessary to be able to separate in general on Shabbos. Needs to be La'alter, needs to be Miyad, needs to be for immediate use. And it also needs to be Ochal Mitoch Psolas. So assuming I'm doing both of those, now what's the final criterion? Am I doing so Biyad, with my own hand, or am I doing so with a Kli? So, what happens if I do this act of boer al yedei mazleg v'kaf? What if I'm using a fork or a spoon? Im nechshav keboer b'chli sha'aser. Would we say that that is really effectively the same thing as using my own hand? Or do we say that, no, I'm now using a kli, and using that kli is aser? Remember what the Shulchan Aruch actually talks about, at least for what is absolutely clearly aser, mida oraisa would be using something like a strainer, a sieve, a colander, a sifter. What is a little bit less clear, these other kelim, Rav Moshe will actually describe what we're talking about. All right, spoiler alert, but a kanon is really like a funnel. Now, a funnel we don't usually think of as being something that you would use to separate, but you could, because if you put in a whole collection of stuff into the top of the funnel, what's going to happen is that the smaller things that actually can find their way through the hole will, especially if you give it a shake, and the larger things will stay on top. Tamchui is usually the word tamchui is used for a charity plate. Right, so that's what it is. It's some kind of platter. It sounds like the way that we'll describe it in a minute is that it just gives you a surface that gives you the ability to kind of like shake up the mixture and more clearly identify where are the good things and where are the bad things. So first category of things that are absolutely created, crafted, manufactured in the first place for the purpose of Boer. These other items are just being utilized in the interest of Boer, but they're not really Boer tools per se. If you went into Bed Bath & Beyond and said, where's your Boer section? So Nafa and Kvara would be found there, and Kanon and Tamchui would not be found there. But either way, you should be receiving 20% off of all said items. Now, that's really the question. More than anything, the question is, does the fork, at most, these will fall under the latter category, right? Those items that maybe are not actual clay borer per se, but I'm utilizing in the interest of brira, of borer, therefore maybe it's aser. Here's what Rav Moshe says, though. It's absolutely clear to me, in my humble opinion, that if he is more easily able to separate by means of the spoon or by means of the fork than he could with his hand, that it's then found that these are actually helping to facilitate the act of brira, the act of sorting. That's absolutely considered to be Boer Bekli. If the reason why I'm using the fork and the manner in which I'm using the fork is to make the act of sorting easier than I would if I was just grabbing the food with my hands, the actual act of borer itself, I'll clarify in a little bit, but meaning the etzem borer, the actual borer itself becomes easier by means of the fork, then that would absolutely be considered a violation of borer. V'yesh l'asar, and we would say that it's asar. Why? Not because it falls under the category of that first collection of kelim, but rather the latter one. Kamo b'kanon v'tamchoy, like these two items that are discussed in the Gemara and Shabbos, brought down by the Shulchan Aruch, these other items, just as they can be leveraged for boer and therefore usher, so to the fork. Aval, however. If they're not really doing anything for the actual separation, the actual sorting itself, yoser mi biyado, any more than doing so by hand, Ella only that machma she'ena rotza lilachlech yado, Shimon, this is what you were talking about, just that I don't want to get my hands dirty, I don't want to sully my actual hands by separating, pulling off the ochel from the psolas and doing so miyad. I don't want to do that with my actual hands because it's gross. So therefore, I'm going to use a hand extender. I'll use utensils. Oh, machma shehu merachok, or that he's sitting at a distance from the food, v'nu yachol hagiyasham biyado, where he's not able to actually reach it. That's really like that the sock extender, right? Okay. So there you also have like the extra clamp and the extra clasp. A fork is maybe, you know, that much more simple, or a spoon is that much more simple. But it's really just a hand extender. It's to be able to reach that which I can't reach on my own. Oh, machma shehu davar lach. This gets a little more tricky. Or that it is wet. This was your example, right? The having cupped hands. Or let's say it's a davar lach. It is liquid. Ve'enu yachol likach biyado. He's not able to grab. I can't use my hand. I can't use my hand to, let's say, grab the liquid out of the solid. So, example. Let's assume that there's some kind of like, chicken dish. Let's say like a something in which the liquid will become more easily integrated into the rest of the ingredients. Meaning to say that if you have large pieces of chicken with a little bit of liquid at the bottom, it's probably not a Torah Revis in the first place. But let's assume you have a real mixture. So I don't know, some kind of like stew or something like that. So that the liquid is all mixed up together with all the small little pieces and particles and ingredients. I want the gravy. I want to spoon the gravy over my rice. Now, I could use my hand, but it doesn't quite work as well. So therefore, I want to use the spoon. First says that, well, if you're using the kli in order to help facilitate the borer in a way that you couldn't do by hand, that's a problem, that's really borer. Then he says, though, that if you are really just trying to extract the liquid and you can't do that with your hand, then that's not really using the spoon in the act of borer. What's the difference? It sounds like the difference is as follows. What Rav Moshe seems to be saying is that the act of separation itself needs to be made more, or needs to be facilitated with the tool. If the tool is being used even in a manner that I couldn't possibly use my hand, right? I can't really get, aside from not wanting to get dirty, I cannot scoop up the sauce, the gravy, with my hand in the same way that I could with a spoon. But that's not the actual act of separation. Meaning it's not that I'm using a spoon to more easily differentiate between the chicken and the gravy. It's just that I can't really actually draw the gravy to my plate unless I'm using something that has depth and can hold that liquid. It's a subtle difference, but I think it's I think that's where it is. Meaning as opposed to consider a colander. If I have a mixture of pasta and water, and I pour it through a colander, that colander is able to separate the water out from the pasta in a way that I cannot by hand, the actual act of separation. As opposed to, no, I clearly see this is where the liquid is and this is where the pasta is. It's just that the spoon is more adept at drawing liquid than my hand is. So that would be another matter, and that would really be Mutter, says Rav Moshe. Okay. So, the enu yachol likach biyado, he's not able to really grab the liquid very easily. V'chadome, hu rak kabor biyado shemutter la'alter ba'ochom mitoch psolas. That would all be permissible. That's all mutter. The haperish kanon, because what do we mean when we speak about a kanon? So, is a barashi jab is def ayin dalachu tsinor rachav. It is a broad pipe. Again, this sounds like a funnel. Right? Mila acharav, it's broad on one end, it's wider on one end. V'katsar milafanav, and then it's more narrow on the other end. Sounds like a funnel. V'nosin kitnis b'makom harechev, and you pour some beans or legumes or what have you into the wide end. U'mena'ana'o, and then you shake it. V'hakitnis miskalgel v'yori derech pi v'hakatzar v'hapsolos nishar b'chli v'uva b'simin shin yud tes sif thal. So what happens is you give it a shake. All the smaller things come through at the bottom, and all the larger things end up in the top and don't really fall through. Vim Kane, if that's the case, hu klisha misbarer binakel al yedei zeh. So meaning this is not just an extension of my hand. It's not just that I'm using this in order to be able to reach something that I couldn't reach with my hand. This is making the actual act of separating one min, one variety, out from the other variety that much more easily done because of the nature of how I'm using it. So asha ein ikar habarir b'chli zeh, even though this isn't really the way that you would ordinarily separate, you wouldn't use this kli. Ela b'nafa v'chvara, you would use these other sifters, colanders, and things like that. So nevertheless, upater, and at the end of the day, it's not a nisr daraisa, it's pater avalasir, it's only a nisr darabana. Du kala achar yad, it's like doing it in a backhanded manner. Mikol makom, nevertheless, asum midarabana. It's still prohibited midarabana. And why? Kevin shadami librera ma'achar degam kein ayude kli niver kadperish rashi shab. So effectively, what I'm using this kli for is in a manner to separate more easily. That's when it's usher, and that'll be usher if I use a fork also, or if I use a spoon also. But if I'm using the fork or the spoon just as a means of ensuring that my hands don't get dirty, that's something else. That would be mutter. If I'm using that, which largely is what we're doing at the table, right? Why is it that we're using a fork and a knife? Because our wives have told us to. Because it is, you would sully your hands otherwise. Why is it that, sometimes like trying to eat wings with a knife and fork just becomes an impossible. There's a whole lot more oftentimes that you can do with your own hands you can do with a knife and fork. We don't want to get our hands dirty. Can't always reach what's actually in the serving dish that's just a little bit too far. And then you also have this subtle but clear enough distinction when it comes to even trying to grab hold of something liquid with a spoon as opposed to one's hand, but that not really using a spoon as a kli that helps to facilitate the actual boer in any which way. So some working kind of parameters when it comes to, first of all, why it is, in the first place, that silverware is generally considered to be in a different category than other kalim, number one. And then number two, how we go about differentiating. Are they always different from one another? Are silverware always fair game? Or will there be scenarios in which it becomes problematic? And Rav Moshe outlines that indeed sometimes it could be problematic. Okay, so...
It sounds like you're saying that this funnel thing is pretty much like the best way to separate the thing would be very difficult to do with your hands.
Meaning with the things that you are into the funnel.
Yeah.
Correct. Meaning that what I'm using the funnel for is to facilitate the actual separation. If not for the funnel, what would I do? I would just be picking things out one at a time. So let's use that as an example. If let's say I'm sitting there picking things out one at a time, and I decided to use tongs. Right, or like a pair of tweezers, just because it's easier to get. You know, I've been working on my pincer grasp since I was a year old, and I never quite got it down. So I don't want to use that. I want to use like a pair of tweezers or a pair of tongs or something like that. That would be mutter, it seems. That would be mutter because that's really just an extension of my hand. It is. Meaning I'm able to grasp that individual item. That's like the liquid. I'm able to grasp that individual item more readily and more easily, more efficiently with that tool than I could with my own two fingers. But it's not separating in a manner I'm not more adept at separating by means of the tweezers than I would be with my hands. If I wanted to separate in a way that's more efficient, that's when I would come onto that funnel, or certainly if I would use a colander, that would absolutely be an Isser Doraisa. Okay, so let's think about the following then. So Rav Moshe outlined that when it comes to using silverware, for the most part, the way that we typically use silverware at the table should be mutter to do. That wouldn't be considered separating by kli, that would be considered separating by hand, it should be mutter. Separating with kalim, even larger kalim, not just silverware. The idea here is not just that they are handheld silverware that we always use at the table. Even if I'm using larger tools, and I'm using them, let's say, in the kitchen, that would still be mutter as long as you're doing it for these reasons. It's just I don't want to get my hands dirty. I'm separating. There are two different types of chicken, turkey, roast, whatever, in a 9x13 in the kitchen, and I want to separate them out onto two different platters, and we're going to eat them right now, immediately, at the Seuda. Is that mutter if I'm using a pair of tongs or I'm using a big serving spoon? Absolutely, because the reason why I'm using those tools is really just to be able to avoid getting my hands dirty. Maybe it's even easier to grasp in the first place. Maybe the food's very hot, but is not really in order to facilitate the actual act of sorting or separating. I'm certainly using a strainer, using a colander to strain. You're probably not straining pasta anymore on Shabbos. Maybe like lakshin for a soup, or like the alphabets, or whatever. But probably not by the time Shabbos comes around. But what about using an actual strainer?
Right? A salad spinner.
Ooh, salad spinner. That's fun. Okay, salad spinners. Maybe a mixture of lettuce and water. And there certainly, that is a tool, right, that the reason why a salad spinner exists is not only because you don't want to get your hands dirty, but it's conceiving of a way to more efficiently separate those two items. So what you could do is you could just hold on to every individual piece of lettuce and just spin around in the middle of your kitchen as fast as possible and get droplets of water all over the I would think that is certainly an act of Borer B'Kli. What about this? I was thinking about this. You know the feta strainer? You know feta cheese?
Yeah.
Feta cheese comes in that little basket, that little plastic blue basket, and you pull it up out of the I made this joke already at the women's year, but is that a problem? Is that a problem? Of course it's a problem. What are you doing eating feta cheese on Shabbos? What's the matter with you? Of course it's a problem. No. So what about that? That is absolutely a...
It's a thing that you use to remove it?
What you could do is you could just grab the actual cheese out.
Right, you can use it. It's usable with that.
Right, but what you do is it comes in this little plastic mesh basket so that you can pull that basket out and it leaves the brine, right? The feta has to stay soaking in brine, otherwise it dries. So you pull it out of the brine and then you can cut off a slice or you could crumble it, whatever you want to do. So the reality is this really harkens back to the shiur, three shiur ago about liquids and solids. If you have a block of feta sitting in brine, that is not a tarovis in the first place. If you have half a block of feta sitting in brine, that's not a tarovis in the first place. In order to achieve a tarovis, when you have liquids and solids mixed, they need to somehow or another integrate together. We spoke about large pickles in a jar where it's hard to say that the pickles actually ever seem to become one or to become mixed with the brine that they sit in, as opposed to olives. We're talking about much more narrow kinds of like cracks and gaps and crevices and things like that, nooks and crannies that exist between the individual olives, between individual chickpeas, between individual corn kernels and things like that. That really does become a tarovis. But a block of feta is not a tarovis. Sitting in its brine is not a tarovis in the first place. Theoretically, if it was already crumbled and it's still sitting in that thing, then you certainly want to be careful. Interesting case.
With the olives, is the liquid technically even a psoas?
Well, if you want the olives, then it is. Then it just became a psoas.
You don't want the olive dried out.
Give you an example. I became like an olive junkie in my old age. I hated them. I hated them when I was younger. And I don't know, at some point, I think maybe even like post-marriage, I don't even know if I liked olives like when I was, I don't know what happened. At any rate, I'm an absolute olive.
You took by a radioactive olive.
It's the only explanation. Radioactive pimento, actually, is an interesting story.
They all radioactive.
So you know what, so I'll get like the largest, jar of like the Spanish one, with the pimentos through it. And then like as I go, I drain off the brine. Right? Like at the very, you want them to stay fresh, but as you start going, you don't want like the brine all the way up to the top and then the olives are all the way to the bottom. So as you go, I kind of drain off the brine. So what about that kind of thing? Making a salad on Shabbos, want to get some olives out, and draining off the brine. It's absolutely draining off psoas from alcohol. So that would if it's a tower of
ovis. No, I'm saying, but when you take it out, like, there's nothing better than like the wet olive, like when it's.
Oh sure, okay, yeah, granted, but
on the olive, it's not really.
But if you're still, but you're still separating it from the rest of that,
right?
From the rest of that brine.
When you're pouring it out.
Yeah, but that's almost like
certainly when you're pouring it out, that's alcohol. That'd absolutely be a borer issue. If you are grabbing, let's say, an olive, even though you like it moist, but you're grabbing an olive out of the brine, so that should be considered a tarovas, which is fine. You could do it with a spoon.
Right.
Right, that's still considered biad. You can you're taking out ochel from solas, as long you just want to make sure that you're doing so for immediate use. Meaning that's not the kind of thing you want to prepare before going to shul. It's the kind of thing you want to prepare after coming back in advance of the su'uda. Here is an interesting question brought down Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Let's say, so I know that I can't use a strainer. One of my daughters likes particularly clear soup. So I know that I can't just take the soup out with a ladle and run it through the strainer in order to strain off all the vegetables and the like. What about clamping the lid down on the top and then pouring off of the pot? So that's ochel from solas, because I want the broth in that instance. I want to leave everything else behind. It's for immediate use. She's going to have it right now. Is that considered using a kli? Is that using a kli? Now I've used the pot lid as a means of holding back the vegetables and the chicken and the bones, whatever else, drain off the broth. Sounds like the funnel. Meaning maybe the pot together with the...
Because you couldn't otherwise do it, or it would take a long time to do it by yourself.
So you know what Rosh Shlomo Zalman says? This is quoting Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. He said that in that case, the pot lid is considered to be yada arechta. It's just an extension of your hand. Why are you using the pot lid? Because I either don't want to scald my hand, or I don't want to get chicken soup and chicken matter all over my hand. In theory, I could, but we don't like doing that because it's disgusting. He says that's the exact same. Would it work? I think it would work. Put your hand at the rim of the pot and pour. It would be gross, but I don't think it would even if it would make a mess, right? So I don't want to make a mess. I want to protect my floors. I want to protect my counter. You know. By the way, I actually think it might even work a little better because I could kind of get the rim of the pot right between a couple of fingers and
you could feel it going through.
Yeah, exactly, right. And just let it go. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's mutter. Okay, so let's talk about veggie peelers. I have only and exclusively seen that vegetable peelers are spoken of as being usser because they are a specialized kli. Specialized utensil. It is there in a similar capacity, maybe even to the nafa and the kvara. How do you, meaning the strainer, how do you go about removing the peel in the most ideal, efficient manner possible? You use this, you use a veggie peeler. So therefore it's usser. So therefore it's usser. You're using a specialized clean.
Like a cucumber, you can do the same job with a good
knife. Okay.
In fact, that was the way the whole country was doing all those things.
The what?
With a knife.
With a knife. Yeah. So I have heard.
I introduced the peeler into my house.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Blew the vines.
Never done it. So I have heard. I've never seen it inside. I've never seen it brought down. But I have heard that there are those who are matir. A vegetable peeler, and specifically do so in the name of Rav Meisha. I've never seen it inside. I don't believe it's found in a tshuva anywhere. I don't believe. But that is that. See, what? Let me just explain why this is a more difficult scenario to sort of wrap our heads around. Ordinarily, we're accustomed to saying, okay, you need three criteria, right? Miyad biyad ochel mitoch psolas. So if it's only ochel mitoch psolos, that's mutter. Why is it mutter to peel a vegetable in the first place, even if I'm using a good knife? Why is it mutter to remove the peel off the cucumber? That's absolutely removing psolos from ochel. So the reason why is we have this sort of, again, What makes these? There's nothing magical about these three criteria. The reason why these three criteria make it mutter to do borer is because at that point we consider this to be an act of achila. This is derech achila. This is how it's done. If this is how it's done, so if this is how eating is done, eating's got to be mutter. How are you supposed to eat a cucumber? How are you supposed to eat a clementine? The way that you eat it is by peeling it. That's the way that you do it. If that's the way that you do it, then you have to say that even in that instance, even though you're removing psolas from ochel, it still must be derech achila. It's got to be. So that's why it would be permissible to use, let's say, a knife or something along those lines.
Is it edible or not?
No. As long as that is the normative mode of going about eating this item. So that's derech achila. If it's derech achila, then how is it that the item that is used in order to prepare it for that achila is usser? I mean, you could certainly hear such an approach, but at any rate, I've never seen it inside. I've heard it sort of secondhand, but I can't really. I can't actually attest to it. All I would say is that if it happens to be your family's minhag and you've received a genuine psak to that effect, you shouldn't think that you're crazy. Certainly, if it's something that your in-laws do, you should certainly not consider them to be crazy for a whole variety of reasons. So anyway, it may well be that there's legitimacy to that, but I've never seen it. I've never actually seen it brought inside. Here is an interesting. Oh, by the way, so Rav Moshe. I'm sorry. I did see that Rav Shlomo Zalman is brought in Shmir Shabbos Kelchasos making this point. He said that it could be that a vegetable peeler would be mutter for the person who is just as adept at using a knife. That if it really makes no difference, so that it's not as though the peeler is actually facilitating my ability to perform the borer in any way, then perhaps it would be mutter. Here's an interesting one that we probably don't think about very often, but it's brought in all the Sfarim on Hilchos Shabbos. What about a tea bag? So we know that there are all kinds of issues one way or the other with respect to making tea on Shabbos. Is it bishul? Is it not bishul? Maybe we'll get there at some point. Let us assume that you're preparing tea in such a way and according to those opinions that it would not be bishul. Okay? So now I have a cup of tea and I have a tea bag sitting in the bottom. When I'm drinking the tea, the first, let's say, I don't know, two-thirds or three-quarters of that cup of tea, no problem whatsoever. What happens when I get down to the bottom quarter of that cup of tea? Now I'm tipping the teacup all the way upside down, the mug, all the way upside down. So aside from the actual tea that's already in the cup, there's also tea inside the tea bag. Right? The tea bag itself constitutes a tarovess of both tea leaves and also the liquid, the water, or the now tea that's become absorbed into that pillow, into that bag inside of the tea bag.
It's still in the cup and you're drinking.
Let's assume it's still in the cup. So if it's still in the cup and now I completely drain the cup, what I'm effectively doing is drawing the tea out of the tea bag. And what am I using in order to strain the tea out from the tea leaves? The tea bag. The tea bag's a kli. It's like a cheesecloth.
Holding the string, or if it's just stuck to the bottom of the cup.
Either way, the force of gravity is going to be drawing the tea out of the bag.
How are you doing that from the moment you stick the bag into the cup?
Why? What are you doing? I mean, there may be a flow of let's say hot water in and out of the cup.
Anytime you move the cup.
It swishes.
You're moving water and tea bag. Well, it's the same thing as when you tip it.
I don't know if that's true, and I'm necessarily drawing the liquid out of the bag.
I guess yeah, it's more of a, you know, when the tea is full, and I'm just thinking right off the top of my head, when the tea is full and the bag's there, I turn it over to something a little bit. You could be pulling some of the liquid out of the tea bag, but it could just as well be in the reservoir above the tea bag. You don't know. When you're all the way down, you're for sure taking it through the membrane of the tea bag. but the tea that's actually going into your mouth.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know at the very beginning. I don't know. I'm having a hard time conceptualizing it. Certainly when you get down to the bottom, that's exactly what you're doing, right? Whatever tea is still present in that bag is exactly what you're drawing out by turning it over. By the way, super duper easy fix to all of this. Super easy fix. After the tea is done, just scoop it out. Scoop it out with a tea bag. One thing that you want to be careful of, right? You pull the tea bag out if it's you know the celestial seasonings. God bless them. They don't have. They try to avoid all Halachas Shabbos issues. They don't have. There are no tags. There are no strings. There are no staples. There are no anything. So you just got to reach in with your hand. Pull it out with a spoon. Try to leave a little bit of liquid in the spoon also, right, to ensure that as you're drawing it out, you're not letting it drip back in, and that's it. And you've neutralized the whole issue. Okay, one last interesting sort of category to talk about is when you have some more unusual kalim. So the Chazon Ish was had a piece about a self-straining teapot. I don't know if they still do that. I don't think teapots are a thing anymore. But really? A teapot. Good for you.
It's the best way to get the temperature you want.
Why? Complicated. Okay. Anyway. So, like an old school chinik, right? And you would have a little strainer inserted into the spout. Why? So that way you could just drop loose tea leaves right into the teapot. You don't have to have a tea bag or anything. And then as you pour out, the strainer in the spout just holds back all the tea leaves and allows everything else to pass through. I assume at some point it could get like kind of gunked up. You have to call like a gutter guy. But until that happens, you're probably in the clear. So Chazon Ish, interestingly, he was misupuk. He wasn't sure that was really a problem. And like this was another kid, like, and the crowd goes wild. like what do you mean? That is exactly what the Gemara and Shabbos is talking about. It's a strainer, it's a sifter, it's a micro screen over the inserted into the spout. How is that any different from any of these other items that we're talking about? So Shlomo Zalman, again quoting Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, felt that you could be Mekil. Why? His feeling was that the Kli itself is really designed for immediate use. What is the purpose of a teapot? A teapot is there not to put in the refrigerator, not in order to make tea for some later time. The whole notion and nature of a teapot is that you're brewing tea to drink now. If that be the case, then since we will define this kli and its usage as being one that's supposed to be for immediate use, then utilizing the then you don't run afoul of using a kli. Meaning, I'm not allowed to use a kli even for immediate use. I can't use a strainer even though I'm going to eat this bowl of soup right away. But why can't I use the strainer? Because the strainer is not necessarily something that you're going to use for immediate use. It's not necessarily part of the eating process. It's not necessarily derech achila. I may well be straining soup to eat at a much later time. A strainer itself by no means prepares food necessarily for the here and now, and it could well be done for later, as opposed to this sort of contraption where the whole thing is built for the purpose of drinking tea right now, therefore it's going to be mutter. Archos Shabbos, by the way, throws out something of a different svara, which I think is very compelling, which is that you have to fundamentally define what the kli is, and then think about the bells and whistles afterwards. This is a teapot. If there's a screen in a teapot, that screen is incidental to the teapot. It's not a strainer. It's not a colander, even though it might have a very, very similar function, but it's not the same. Since this is fundamentally a teapot, maybe that would be another tzad to say that we could be mekel. By the way, even if you don't drink tea, this is brought down in Orcha Shavos, that is a great chap. You have these, the water pitchers, right, that have it has like a slight ridge at the end, or like a little roof at the top, so that if you have ice water in the pitcher, as you pour, it holds back the ice so that it doesn't come, tumbling over the top. So the claim is that it's the exact same Shiloh, which seems very, very reasonable, right? That effectively you have a tarovis of both water and ice in the pitcher, and what you're holding, the purpose of a water pitcher is to be able to drink now. You don't fill up a water pitcher to put in like your water cellar and have later. It's to bring to the table and be able to drink right now. According to Shlomo Zalman, it would certainly be mutter. And again, since even Archos Shabbos, this other idea, the other svara, is that primarily this is a water pitcher. Incidentally, it has this other feature that makes it that much more usable and that much more functional, but that couldn't really be considered to be an actual kli brera. One last item to talk about. I've seen this more in restaurants, and I don't know how much we frequent restaurants on Shabbos anyway. What about a salt shaker with rice inside of it? Does anybody do this at home?
No, it's a good idea, though.
It's a great idea.
It is. It's
dehydrated.
Yeah. So my problem, I told you I was an olive junkie. This goes hand in hand. I am a recovering salt junkie.
Not good for you.
So it's a problem. Anyway, huh?
Use spices.
Well, how does this factor in? Because I tend to go through the salt shaker so quickly that it doesn't have time to, you know, like harden. I don't need the rice. It's a problem. I'm working on it. Anyway, so Rav Moshe is quoted as having been machmir. Rav Moshe himself doesn't have a tshuva, but I saw it quoted, I think, in Archos Shabbos, or maybe, I don't remember. One of the Sfarim quoted another Sefer that had quoted Rav Moshe. It actually posed the question to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says, sure, that's Boer. What are you doing? When you shake the salt, you're holding back the rice because the rice won't fit through the individual holes. Two Svaros from two very prominent Poskim who say that you can be Mekel. First is from Rav Eliashiv, quoted in the Sefer Ayel Meshulash, which has a lot of Rav Eliashiv's tshuvas and Piskei Halachos that were asked from the author. So Rav Eliashiv was Mekel. Why? Because what is a salt shaker? Salt shaker is designed as an item, it is an item that is designed to dispense, not to separate. The reason why you have that screw top with the perforated holes in the top of a salt shaker is so that you can let out just the right amount of salt. Not in order to be able to hold back the larger items and only allow the smaller items through. It's in order to only, the presumption is you'll only have small little granules of salt in the salt shaker in the first place, but you only want to let out so many of them at once, as opposed to having them all just spill all over the food. So it is not, in the first place, it cannot be considered to be a kli that's used for borer in the first place.
On top of that, technically, if you need the rice in there, you're using it to prevent like coagulation of the salt granules themselves. So if you have that in the salt shaker, you're technically being borer also, right? Because if you have large chunks of salt and small chunks of salt, you're shaking to get the small chunks of salt out.
Interesting. I think the argument would still be the same. That what is the reason why you put salt in a salt shaker is not out of fear that some of it will coagulate and you only want the smaller flakes and crystals that get out as opposed to the larger clumps. The presumption is that it's not going to coagulate. The presumption is,
like, if you have that problem,
Diamond and Morton are all assuming that the average American's like me, that you are going through, you are zipping through that salt shaker. But the reason why you have it on top, even when they're very, very small, the reason why you have those perforations on top is to only allow a few of them through at a time. So that's Rav Eliashiv's assumption. I was wondering, by the way, if you might be able to make then, based on that.
Well, I think if it came to the point where you needed the rice, then you're looking for the smaller pieces of salt rather than the larger pieces of salt.
If you need the rice in the first place, true. But again, that's sort of like
The rice is a preventative, right? So you're only supposedly putting in when the salt is all small pieces.
No, you're doing it then, but you're doing it because you would.
Because that's the concern.
Have various sizes.
But even if that wasn't the case, I would still use a salt shaker. I would still use a salt shaker. My primary interest when I'm using a salt shaker at any given moment is that I only want some crystals to end up on my food as opposed to all of them.
You know, once you have the rice in there, you certainly don't want the rice in your food.
That's true, but that's incidental. That's not the primary. That's not the primary function of the kli. That's not the primary reason why I'm even using the kli.
Because the salting yourself has nothing to do with the rice.
Not even the primary reason why I'm using the kli. I thought, and I'm just throwing this out there. This is not a completely formulated svara, but I was wondering if, according to that, you could push back against the concern of using the tea bag with the bottom quarter of tea in your cup. What is the reason why the tea is in a bag as opposed to just loose tea in the teacup? Not in order to be able to strain the hot water out of the tea bag or strain the tea out of the tea bag that gets caught there. The reason why it's in a tea bag is because in the first place you don't want it to become integrated into the rest of the tea. You want to prevent the mixture from ever happening in the first place. So is it possible that once you've defined that this is my real purpose in having this contraption, having the paper that makes up the tea bag, that's what it's doing in the teacup in the first place. It's really not there to be able to strain out the hot water. The fact that it happens to allow the hot water to strain out afterwards is really incidental as compared to, I'm not sure it's exactly parallel, but I don't know, more food for thought than anything else.
So if you go to making a bigger, like a powdered sugar, which is similar to salt, is that any different?
Again,
is
if
that is getting close to a sifter?
I mean, if like, the
where do we stop?
See, sifting isn't a problem in of itself. Sifting is a problem when you're trying to separate whatever else might be in that sugar. If you have a concern that you have, I don't know, bugs or something else, something unwanted in your sugar or whatever, so then that would be a problem. But either way, the salt shaker is not really designed for that purpose, and I'm really not using it for that purpose, right? If you asked me, even if I'm using a salt shaker that has grains of rice in it, if you ask me why am I using the salt shaker, I'll tell you in order to be able to get out only a little bit of salt at a time, not in order to be able to ensure that the rice doesn't end up in my soup. So for Rav Yashiv, anyway, that was the critical point. Rav Shlomo Zalman, last idea, also was Mekel, but for a different reason. Because of what he said previously, that if you have a kli that is designed to allow immediate dispensing, that can't be considered to be a kli brira. The reason why a colander is considered to be a borer kli is because it's not necessarily something that I'm going to be utilizing immediately before I eat. I may well be boiling pasta and then separating, or I may be separating grain, or I may be separating, straining out soup or whatever, even for storage, for the purpose of storage as opposed to eating now. But if something is used and something is designed for the purpose of eating right now, then it can never ever be considered to be a kli brira, and that's what he considers salt shaker to be. The reason why the salt is in the salt shaker, the reason why it's being used is to salt my food for right now, not in order to like preserve my food for some later. If you're using the salt shaker to preserve your food for later, you're going to be standing there a while. You're better off using a tablespoon or something like that. All right, let's pause it here. Mirza Shem, we'll start with, I'm not sure what exactly. If you have any suggestions, I'm all ears, but probably some other malacha, Mirza.